21, one should not eulogize or praise anyone else before the deity. So other than when we're praising devotees, you know, in the formal situation, the spiritual master, this means we're not telling other people that, you know, they're such great people because they gave such a nice donation and all this. And in other words, we're eulogizing because it would be great for collection, for your own purposes, like that. So that's to be avoided. That's not true. So in other words, it's the Lord or something connected directly with the Lord. 22. One should not speak any ill names before the deity. Right? So we're not using, how to say, colorful language. Right? 23. One should not pass air before any deity. That's the obvious. It's going to disturb you, everyone else, and talk to the Lord. Right? The environment in the temple is supposed to be something, you know, more meditative. Okay, 24, one should not fail to worship the deity according to one's means. In other words, you have facility, what facility you have, then you should be worshiping the deity like that. Not that you have so much, you get so little. Here probably a little explanation. In Bhagavad Gita, it states that the Lord is satisfied if some devotee offers him even a leaf or a little water. This formula prescribed by the Lord is universally applicable, even for the poorest man, but that does not mean that one who has sufficient means to worship the Lord very nicely should also adopt this method and try to satisfy the Lord simply by offering water and a leaf. If he has sufficient means, he should offer nice decorations, nice flowers, and nice foodstuffs, and observe all ceremonies. It is not that one should try to satisfy the Supreme Lord with a little water and a leaf, and for himself spend all his money in sense gratification. In other words, what is your position, what facility you have, then you should increase for the deity. You have less, then he's satisfied with less. So you have more than you naturally would offer more. And that's the position. 25. One should not eat anything which is not offered first to Krishna. So then, means in your house, then, you know, then you're offering everything to Krishna. What you cook, then you offer. That means is that generally that means what you're cooking should be offerable also. Like that. So standards of cleanliness, like that, you know, the quality of ingredients, like that. Then you try to do the best you can. Like that. But it's still the same principle as before. What facility you have, that's what you offer. You have more, you offer more, you have finer, you know, you eat finer ingredients, so finer ingredients you offer to the Lord, then you're taking the remedy. Less than what you can. 26. One should not fail to offer fresh fruit and grains to Krishna according to the season. That means this may be a bit esoteric. There used to be a thing called seasons, right? You know, where you had, you know, like a summer time, it was like, you know, the sun would come out, it'd be warm. Winter time, it would be cold. You know, you have your times of rain, spring rains, fall that rains, you know, sort of warm. And you would have actually different things growing in these different seasons. You know, amazing, but true. It used to be there, right, in ancient times. I think it's between the Palaeolithic and the, what's that, Jurassic, you know, somewhere in there, these things used to happen. And, you know, so sometimes you can talk to the really old people, they can tell you about it. Hear a little about World War II, you can hear about seasons, you know, I mean, it's very interesting. So, used to have things, so when there was a season, then you would offer things according to that. If it's something that's the season where these fruits or vegetables or grains are happening, then you would offer those to the deity. So if something new is there, you would offer it. You know, modern is everything's there, all times, all places, you know, so then that's another thing. So then it's just a matter of what variety is available, what things that you have interest in, then you should take care. It's not that you have an interest in, you know, some particular fruit or other thing. If in season you don't offer to the deity, right? That's the whole point. You don't offer frozen foods. You don't offer frozen foods. It means it's ideal. ideal if you can get fresh things, you know, like that. That's there. But, you know, if you're living in a place where, you know, things don't grow, you know, I mean, we don't offer, you know, kangaroos, wallabies, wombats, platypus. So it limits kind of what's available. So you have to see what's available. If you do have fresh things, you better use that. If you don't, then try to get whatever's the closest to it, what's the next best. You know what I'm saying? In other words, something fresh is always going to be of better quality. Nowadays, people worry about it because it's health. You know, so and actually the only reason it's there is because someone's figured out how to make money out of it, right? I mean, health food freaks have been around, I think, since the 30s, you know, like that. That I know this whole modern nutrition and everything. No, we don't go too far. It's just it was getting far back. Yeah. Okay, thank you. And my grandmother was a health food freak, you know, so in the 60s, I was having to, what do you call it? Drink my solids, chew my liquids, and I had to, you know, down, you know, a glass of, you know, carrot juice, you know, squeezed from, you know, you had to fed through a machine that did, you know, in those days. Nowadays, you have this little thing, you just put it in and you get juice. But those days, it was like, you really have to work to make carrot juice. So, you know, like that, we already, you know, I was dragged off to many a spirulina conference, like, you know, so learning how you grow this stuff, like that. Back then it was called, I think, Blue Algae 56, I think, or something it was called. You know, so it was, nowadays, now it's got some fancy stuff. Like, grew in Mexico, like that, you know, so. So it was always there, but it wasn't popular because they didn't figure out they could make money from it. You know, now you have macros, they make money, so everything's organic, you know, like that. So, basically, if people are worried about it for the health, but that's the natural way to live, that's how people should be living anyway. So then, the idea is whatever is the most natural, most healthful, that's the kind of ingredients you're using. You know, not necessarily that style of cooking, but those ingredients. Does that make sense? So you're always your best quality. Okay. Anything else on this? Yes. Praising who in front of you? No, devotees, it's fine. What they're talking about here is just like this. Means, let us say, you have a fundraising campaign for, you know, I'd say some kind of program. Now all the big donors come up on the stage and, you know, they bring out this, you know, I'd say 5 foot long check and, you know, pictures are taken and crocodile grins are grinning, you know, everything is happening. So in there, so many praises will be made, this and that, but what's the whole point? It's fundraising. They may have a good cause, but you know what I'm saying? So people are being praised in this way so that they will be favorable, that they will continue to give, or that others will be encouraged that they're being recognized, so therefore then, does that make sense? That's the kind of what we're talking about. Devotees are praised for proper service attitude, this and that, that's fine. You don't have a motive for it. You're not coming up and say, oh, you're such a nice devotee, you do such nice service, so therefore, can you know, you help me in the kitchen. That stuff you do outside. Inside is, you're saying, you know, the devotees have done nice service, or this and that, we want to appreciate that, because sometimes devotees don't know. You know what I'm saying? You know, we hear about, you know, those who do preaching or book distribution and that. We don't hear about the person who washed pots for 20 hours in the kitchen so their master feast happened. You know, stuff like that. That's fine. You know, worship the spiritual master and these kind of things, that's okay. Does that make sense? So you have to distinguish, you know. In other words, if the point is glorifying Krishna's devotees, there's no problem. If it's a matter of, I have something I want to get done, I'm glorifying people to butter them up, that's what you step outside for. Does that make sense? Does that make sense? Anything else? No? Okay. 27. After food has been cooked, no one should be offered any foodstuff unless it is first offered to the deity. Right? So then you always make sure that the deity is getting it, because otherwise then when it's something after, then it's what's left over. It means you have the thing, if you have what is kashar, but you also have what is called sesha. Sesha means finished. It's just like, you know, everyone's eaten, no one wants any more, what's left at sesha. Like that. So, therefore, if you have some special guest coming or something respectable, you'll take out for them first, even though they may be coming later, because then you're taking, and it's not that. But what no one wants, that's called sesha. So you're always being very careful about this position. So therefore the deity is always offered first. You know, if there's some problem, time is there that you have to feed devotees right now and that, you take it out, you offer to the deity and serve the devotees simultaneously. But the point is the deity has gotten his portion first, his considerations first. Right? Does that make sense? One should not sit with his back towards the deity. Right? Otherwise, it's, yeah, no one. 29. One should not offer obeisances silently to the spiritual master. Or in other words, one should recite aloud the prayer to the spiritual master while offering obeisances, right? Because otherwise, when it just becomes a ritual, you just mumbo jumbo through it. This way you hear, you remember, you know, like that. It makes sense what you're saying, you know, like that. So that's the idea. So that means when you're offering obeisances, yeah, okay. 30. One should not fail to offer some praise in the presence of the spiritual master. 31. One should not praise himself before the spiritual master. 32. You know, or some combined this, you know. Oh, so you're so wonderful, great. By your mercy, I did this and I did that. And like that, you get that. You know, catch all day. 32. One should not deride the demigods before the deity. Right? So we don't worship them, but they're not derided because they work for God. The demigods work for God, so they're not derided, but they're not worshipped because when you worship him, there's no need to worship them. Because their offices, the potency of their offices come from God. Right? Indra means the controller, right? The king. So Krishna is the supreme controller. Shiva means auspicious. Krishna is the supreme auspicious. Right. So, like this, and whatever, Yama, you know, is the Lord of Death, you know, Krishna is death personified, you know, so that everybody, even Yamaraj dies, you know, not because of himself, because of Krishna, so, therefore, he's the source of everyone. Yes?
Well, we sometimes see that, like, little Shivalingas or Ganesh, they appear on devotees' altars, like private altars, and now, the tradition in our line of
Ganesh, not as much. He's there, if it means especially if you're following Vedic things, because Vedic rituals always were open with worship of Ganesh, but he's generally in the form of a pot. Because in every Vedic ritual, then there's always the got stop and the establishment of the pot. So every Veda has a method for it. Every system of worship and then all agamas that are based on, then also start with that. But for us, the Pancharatrik, then specifically, then will be the spiritual master. So Ganesh is not Shiva, then you'd have to ask the devotee why he's there. But generally, it's that he's the best of devotees. So then he's worshipped along with, you know, because it means if he's worshipped in the form of Sada Shiva, then he's non-different from Krishna. Though he's transformed, it's a different mood. He's a devotee, like that. So then, it's not a problem, but it's not a necessity. You know, it's not something that should happen as a fad. It shouldn't, you know, start up as that. You know, that does that make sense? You know, he comes on his own. That's another thing, but you know, there's no need to go out of your way specifically. very common. Sanatana Goswami every day would offer respects to Lord Shiva. There's a temple on the way to Lord Bazaar. Most people don't even know it's there, but in that temple, that's, I'm not sure where he used to go. I think he used to go to another place to offer obeisances or respects. I think it was maybe the Gopeshwar. When he was really old and he didn't move around much, then this other temple, then he said, you just come to this temple. He protects the Dham, so in the Dham, the Gaudiya tradition, there's always, I think, five forms of Shiva. He protects the Dham, you know. So probably the four directions, one in the middle, like this. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur established, you know, Shiva lingas in the Yogpeet, like that. Vrindashiv, like that. So you have Pravadamaya Vrindashiv in Mayapur, and then you have Sankate Devi and Gopeshwar and Vrindavan. So they're part of the scene, but they're not a prominent part, you know. I'm saying they don't take up, you know, it's not like Gornitai or anything, they're on the side, like that. So what's been offered to the Lord has been offered to them. They're not worshipped separately, like that, as such. So,
yeah. Maharaj, I'm quite new to Hare Krishna. And we've got an altar at home. I was recently told that if I'm sleeping in the same room as the altar, my feet should not be facing it. Is that correct, or is there a certain way?
Generally, a good practice.
Okay.
You know, like that. But if that's all that's available, then when you're sleeping, the altar should be covered, or you know, something,
yeah,
or some way.
We're covered.
You know what I'm saying? But the normal thing is you wouldn't face put your feet to the deities.
Yeah.
Because the idea is to sleep east, you know, so the deities are facing east, but the point is east is where the sun comes up. Right? Sun, that's where knowledge comes from. And the sun represents knowledge, it represents purity, all these. So the deities are the source of this. So then if you sleep facing the deity, you won't have any problem. That's the consideration. You know, you're sleeping in another room, then you worry whether it's east or whether it's south. You know what I'm saying? But if by sleeping east, then you're going to put your feet to the deity, instead you south or face the deity.
Thank you.
Okay. You want to say something? This is the list of 32 offenses. Besides these, there are a number of offenses which are mentioned in the Varaha Purana. So these are the 32 main for the Seva Aparadhas, and then he's given a list taken from the Varaha Purana. He gives another 29. There'll be basically finer details of these, you know, but being very specific. Because otherwise, sometimes they may not come to mind. They are as follows. One, one should not touch the deity in the dark room. When the lights are off, you can't see, you don't touch the deity. You don't think, well, I'm doing this, I'll just keep going, no light of life. No one likes to be touched when it's dark. You don't know what it is, you know. Person standing there, and then, you know, you think it's the person, and you find out, you know, it's a slobbery Saint Bernard or something. You know, it's just, it's, you know what I'm saying? So it's a bit of an annoyance. So one should always see if the lights go off, turn something on, light something, you know, like that. The electricity goes off, light a candle. Don't just think, I should get the work done. No, it's a matter of, you know, the Lord's a person, so he doesn't really touch in the dark. Plus, you don't know where he is, you're going around, you may poke him somewhere, you know, like this, so it's not nice. Two, one should not fail to strictly follow the rules and regulations in worshiping the deity. You know, so there's rules there, there's technicalities for those who are pejorative, they should follow those. You know, not that they should, you know, be lazy or make excuses or say it's fanatic or this or that. Now they're who's given them, right? In the 11th canto, we see that Krishna is telling Uddhava about the process of worshipping the deity. So who's given those rules? Right, so then, would it be advisable to say following those rules would be fanatic? Right? You understand? So he has given them himself, there's what it is, that's what the Pancharatra. So Pancharatra is given this by Narad Muni. Narad Muni has heard it from Brahma. Brahma has heard it from Krishna. So the Pancharatra is coming from the Lord. So then as is given to us, that we follow. So they have already simplified it. Right? Our deity worship book is about that fast. The actual worship itself is about this much. Hari Bhakti Vilas, which it's called from, is this big. So there is a serious reduction there. So you don't have to worry that this is fanatic, over the top, too many rules. Then cut that. Three, one should not enter the temple of the deity without first making some sound. Right? You know, you don't like people to just walk in on you, so some sound is made. Knock on the door, bell is rung, some, you know, sound is made, some, you know, glorification, something. Four, one should not offer any foodstuff to the deity which has been seen by dogs or other lower animals, right? Because a dog doesn't discriminate. You walk by with the offering for the deity, the dog doesn't go, oh, here's the boga offering, right? He just goes, food, right? So, therefore, because it's the devotion, it's the subtleties that is interesting to Krishna, therefore, that's why the plate is always covered. That's the rule, is that it's always covered. Not a matter of, oh, it's too late, we don't have time. No, it's always covered. Like that. Five, one should not break silence while worshiping. In other words, if it's discussions about Krishna, glorification of Krishna, chanting, mantras, that's not what it's meant to be silence. It's not that two Bajaris are sitting there and, you know, and one's going, hey, I got tickets to a, you know, flea match. You wanna, you know, like that. It's not like that. You know, so that's breaking silence. Okay. Six, one should not pass urine or evacuate while engaged in worshiping. You know, so that's obvious. You know, the deity room is not for such things, too. Also, one would try to arrange one's life when not leaving the deity room for such things. If it happens, you do it, but it shouldn't be taken as... In other words, it's practical. Is that if it's a need, then it's done. But one wouldn't be thinking it's all right. One would be careful, arrange one's, you know, how to say, eating and drinking and all that to coincide with the worship so one will not be disturbed by that. Does that make sense? But it doesn't mean that it comes up that, you know, now everything's lost. No, you go to the bathroom, come back, continue to worship. Seven, one should not offer incense without offering some flower. So incense is fragrance. Fragrance comes from the earth. The flowers are the natural fragrance, right? So in other words, the flower is the original fragrances, right? Then incense is made from those. But, does that make sense? You know, you have rose incense. Where did they get the, you know, in other words, if you're offering, you know, the derivative, naturally you offer together. That's why the dupe arctic is always incense and flowers. Like that. If you expand that, like we do for Tulsi, then it's a lamp. You know, because the lamp is considered the main of all the items offered. But the incense and flower, that goes together. Eight, useless flowers without any fragrance should not be offered. We won't comment too much on that, since in Australia where I guess flowers with fragrance are another one of those strange phenomena we've heard about along with seasons, right? Nine, you know, in other words, use flowers for decoration, whatever you have, but try to find ones that do have fragrance, like that, for offering, at least for our case, for putting on the deity, like that. Fragrance means nice fragrance. Doesn't mean it smells like a box that, you know, has been had things in it to keep them nicely, preservatives. Nine, one should not fail to wash his teeth very carefully every day. Okay. So that means brushing and rinsing the mouth, cleaning the tongue, those kinds of things. Ten, one should not enter the temple directly after sexual intercourse. Right? There should be a bath. There should be time in which the mind is going to be able to switch itself from whatever mode it's in to something in that of worship. So therefore, once 7. One should not touch a woman during her menstrual period, because then contaminated. You need to take, adjust the clothes, take bath, these kind of things. So, therefore, one should be careful about that. In tradition, then, it's like the women get a 3-day paid holiday, right? They don't do nothing, they just do whatever they want. There's a particular part of the house. The men have to clean the house, they have to do all the cooking, they have to take care of the women. You know, that's the tradition, right, like that. You know, so, it's, you know, for them, it's not a bad time. I know a lot of traditional families, that's all the men know how to cook, because every month they have to do everything in the house, like that, so they just know how to do it. 12. One should not enter the temple after touching a dead body. Next time you're around touching dead bodies. Right. So in other words, you should take a bath, just put on clean clothes and stuff like that. You know. So even if you work at the morgue, you still should, follow this. 13. One should not enter the temple wearing garments of red or blue color or garments which are unwashed. That unwashed means they'll be dirty, they'll be contaminated, they'll have a smell. Red or blue. Red means it's very, how you say, bright, kind of like that. Bright red. Because it's fire, because what it does is, that's what the color that the tantrix wear, so that's generally not what we use. Women can use it to some degree, like that, but generally the men avoid it. Blue garments is the blue-black color that Radharani wears. In other words, we don't wear the red. Men don't wear the red because that's what tantrics wear. The tantric sannyasis and those who do all that, and they wear that color. And blue is because that's Radharani's color. So it's that particular blue-black, in other words, solid. So if it's there, it may be there something. In other words, women may use these colors to some degree, but the men are careful about these. 14. One should not enter the temple after seeing a dead body, because then, like the other before, it makes an impression, so one may be constantly seeing that. The point is after seeing means, as long as you're seeing that, don't enter the temple. When it's faded from the mind, then there's no problem. So if it fades immediately, you're used to it, that's your job. You work with Hellboy or something, so it's not a problem for them. Just make sure you wash your hands and feet and stuff. 15. One should not pass air within the temple, so it's the same as before, one should not be angry within the temple. You notice that this group is specifically what is, the other is more kind of like dealing with, the opulence, the position of the deity, respect for the deity. This group, you see, is very much more very personal things that are just no one appreciates. So therefore, God doesn't like to do that. One should not be angry within the temple. 17. One should not enter the temple after visiting a crematorium. Because there's one is same thing, one is will become impure because when they burn the bodies and all that, the dust and all that does fly around. The environment is also, has a particular mood. So one would want to go, take a bath, change clothes, all that. Then one comes to the temple. 18. One should not belch before the deity. So until one has fully digested his food, he should not enter the temple. So immediately, eating and then like that. So in other words, when everything's a little bit more, balanced, then, like that, one should be a little more careful. 19, so in other words, means, if it happens, be discreet, don't pull off the, macho tough guy, belch and I'm here, anybody can, like that. In other words, the Shrek, better out than in, philosophy is not so much appreciated in the country. Here's a good one. 19. One should not smoke ganja or marijuana. Sorry about that one. Okay? But one would say, but what about, and then 20, one should not take opium or similar intoxicants. Except that your crack, your heroin, your brown sugar, you know, I use this, you know, sorry boys. So in other words, the more natural and the not as natural. In other words, the unprocessed or minimally processed and severely processed intoxicants would not be used. Okay. Right. I guess that kind of blows the idea that Prabhupada established this one, it's not there in the days. Okay. So this is Varaha. 21. One should not enter the deity room or touch the body of the deity after having smeared oil over his body. In other words, if you put on oil, then you take a bath. So putting on oil is good. It's good for the health. It's done very regularly, once if not twice a week. You know, in Indian tradition, it balances the airs in the body. It does so many things. But one will take a bath afterwards. Because oil, if it's on the body, it collects dust. You know what I'm saying? So that's what oily substances are for. If you have something, you're putting these creams that they just disappear, they're not oily, then that's okay. You know, whether they do anything for you or not, that's another discussion. But those ones, you know, they're not collecting dust. But anything that remains oily, that's the problem. Because that'll collect dust and then it's impure. 22, one should not show disrespect to a scripture teaching about the supremacy of the Lord. Right? So even though it may not be one of our scriptures, still we don't make comments about it. It may not be something that's one of our main scriptures, but it's not that we make comments about it. You know, just like we don't disrespect the Demikas. 23, one should not introduce any opposing scripture. Like that. We have the Vedas, they established that, so we shouldn't be the ones introducing. Let others do that. You know, we don't introduce. 24, one should not chew betel before the deity. Like that. It's not so much of a problem over here. But I guess over here your replacement would be your bubble gum or something. Menthol. 26, one should not worship the Lord while sitting on the bare floor. One must have a sitting place or carpet, because that represents the earth, like that. So that's why then we always sit on the mats and stuff like that. And you know, if we're just sitting, it's warm, it's not so much of a problem. But when you're worshiping the deity, there always needs to be a mat. At the same time, one's respectful towards it. Ideally, one's not pushing it around with their feet, because it represents the earth, so therefore, use your hand, get it in place, wash your hand, do your puja. 27, one should not touch the deity before one has completed taking bath. 28, one should not decorate his forehead with a three-line tilak. That means the Shaivite tilak across this way, because that's Murva Viswas in the Torah world. Or we wear Urdhva Mundra, right, because that's the opposite. The urdhva means it's going up. You're taking the upward path out of the material world to the Lord. So that's what tilak means. 29, one should not enter the temple without washing his hands and feet. Like that. So in other words, one's clean. You know, you should always. Other rules are that one should not offer food which is cooked by a non-Vaishnava. One should not worship the deity before a non-devotee. And one should not engage himself in worship the Lord while seeing a non-devotee. One should begin the worship of the demigod. One should begin the worship of the demigod, Ganapati, who drives away all impediments in the execution of devotional service. In the Brahma Samhita, it is stated that Ganapati worships the lotus feet of Lord Nrisimhadev. And in that way it has become auspicious for the devotee for clearing out all impediments. Therefore, all devotees should worship Ganapati. The deity should not be bathed in water which is then touched by the nails or fingers. In other words, you get the water for bathing the deity, the lotus. It's not, you know, when you do it, the water runs over your fingers, you stick it inside. And the nails aren't considered so clean. Because underneath you can collect so many things. You wash your hands so you're not touching. The skin is pure, you know, as long as it's washed. Like that. Does that make sense? And so then, but the nails are not considered in as great a position, so you're more careful about them, so they shouldn't touch the water. When a devotee is perspiring, he should not engage himself in worshipping the deity. Similarly, there are many other prohibitions. I mean, if the deity room is hot, therefore you're perspiring, that's another thing. You know, but one should try to avoid that. But it shouldn't be that you're all hot and sweaty and then you go into the deity room. Like that, one should be careful. Similarly, there are many other prohibitions. For example, one should not cross or step over the flowers offered to the deities, nor should one make a vow in the name of God. These are all different kinds of offenses in the matter of executing devotional service, and one should be careful to avoid them. In the Padma Purana, it's stated that even a person whose life is completely sinful will be completely protected by the Lord if he simply surrenders unto Him. So it is accepted that one who surrenders unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead becomes free from all sinful reactions. And even when a person becomes an offender under the Supreme Personality of Godhead himself, he can still be delivered simply by taking shelter of the holy names of the Lord. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. In other words, the chanting of the Hare Krishna, or the chanting of Hare Krishna, is beneficial for eradicating all sins. But if one becomes an offender of the holy names of the Lord, then he has no chance of being delivered. Okay, next, so are there any questions more on the Seva Opera? Because next we're going to the 10 offenses of the chanting of the holy names. Okay, yes.
Maharaj, I want to ask you, what does it mean to be a fanatic in terms of following these rules? Because we often call each other, you know, this person is fanatical, or because you said something about we're not fanatics.
We're not fanatics, but it doesn't mean that we follow. It means a fanatic is one who follows a rule because he thinks it's by following the rule that's the perfection. We follow the rules because God gave the rules, so wanting to please Him, therefore we follow Him. So it's a matter of the Lord's pleasure rather than the perfection of a rule, because the smartest then they consider by following the rule, in other words, by appropriate action, they get the result that they want. And so they consider the result only comes because I have acted. So it's my endeavor. In other words, they go so far as to think, well, even the demigods can't give a good result unless I've done a good work. So because I do the yajna, therefore only then they're authorized to give me things. So actually I'm in control of everything. You know, is their consideration. So the idea is because I've done the proper work, therefore I deserve the proper result. But the point is we're dependent upon the Lord, so it's up to Him. We may deserve that result, but at the same time, it's what work we've done in the past, how that has an effect on the present situation that we can't say. So to demand it, that wouldn't be proper. You know. So this is why the smarter mentality is avoided. So following the rule is because they please Krishna. This is given by Rupa Goswami himself. So then, you know, and Prabhupada here is translating and giving. So their devotion is like the Krishna book. It's giving the stories with purports written in. And so that it wouldn't be mentioned if it wasn't something that was easily followable. All these are easily followable. Generally it's a matter of misunderstanding. Rupa Goswami mentions Niyam Agraha. Means one who doesn't, where there's a misunderstanding of the rule of Niyam. I mean, so Agraha is a, they're either giving up because they don't understand it, they're the ones that say fanatic, and then there's those who follow them simply because their rules, they must be followed. That's the other. That's the other extreme. So generally these two are loggerheads. The point is we follow the rules because it pleases the Lord. You know, so those things that are easily able to do and those kind of things like that, then that's what we follow. You know, so cleanliness, you know, personal considerations, all these things are easy enough to follow. They're part of the culture. We would be doing them anyway. You know, so to say it's fanatic generally is coming, most people will say that means it's either someone senior might be commenting on someone junior that they are getting too wrapped up in the rules, so their mentality is fanatic, you know, or the comment would be by people who either don't like rules or don't understand rules and therefore think it's fanatic, so therefore they can give it up. But that's Niyamagraha, as Rupa Goswami says. So Rupa Goswami gives these directives, and so Rupa Goswami also gives that mentality in dealing with the rules that one has to be very careful of. Either following them simply because they're rules or giving them up because one doesn't really understand. Like that. Because, you know, we never did that in our house, but, you know, that's since when is your house the standard of, you know, culture, you know, for the world? You know, that would be the next question. Does that make sense? You know, so that's much different. You know. So the means those who have grown up in more religious cultures that where ritual is part of the culture generally have less difficulties with this. But in the modern culture, a lot of times ritual isn't really part of, you know. At the same time, people do appreciate rituals. You know, it's like a wedding ceremony is a ritual. You know, the girl comes in, everyone stands, she walks down the aisle, the father gives her away, you know, the priest says a few words, and that says your husband and wife, and then everybody has a good time, and, you know, something happens, there's some food, there's some music, there's some nice interaction, and, you know, everyone feels it's complete, so everyone has some form of ritual of that. Death ceremony, everyone come together, they'll try to say as nice things they can about them. You know, even though it's a little difficult because, you know, the girl, you know, she was a crackhead and, you know, and killed herself by an overdose and, you know, left two, you know, illegitimate children behind and all. So the priest has a tough time, but he tried his best. He has to try his best, you know, like that, you know. At least she's laying in a coffin in the church, so at least she's come to church at least once in her life. So, you know, something he tries to find good about it, you know. So everybody is pleased with that, and there's a closure, you know, there's some little ritual, you know, the coffin's put in the ground, they put some dirt, you know, as long as they have dirt, they don't, you know, they're out in the desert, then they put a stone or some sand, you know, something they feel that, you know, some kind of, you know what I'm saying? So people actually like rituals, but the problem is if they're not used to them or accustomed to them, so these seem new, so therefore it becomes a problem. But actually, they're not much of a problem, because most of them are all just very personal, practical, common sense. You know, not popular these days, but, you know, it's like another one of those things with the seasons and, you know, flowers that have snow and stuff. Is that okay?
I think Maharaj missed out a point in Ganesha worship.
Ganesh. I missed one, because I thought we had discussed it before.
Are we saying that we need to worship Ganesha in that one point there, or?
But as you noticed before, as the general Pancharatra, then you're dealing with, I'd say, worship the Guru, so it takes care of that. The principle is, again, that means the obstacles have to be removed by approaching the authority, the appropriate authority. Therefore, then, how you say, the worship of the spiritual master is fine. If you know the technicalities, how to install the pot for Ganapati and all that, it's there, you're in that mind, you've been initiated in, you know, say Yajurveda, you do it that according to Ahibunyayash, you know, Samhita, then fine. It's not a problem. You don't have a problem with Ganesh. Like that. He's a devotee of Nishimide. But at the same time, if you want to keep it simple, you don't have to get into all that. Devotees have enough problem figuring out which end of the spoon to use for Ashman, let alone installing the pot. You know what I'm saying? So, therefore, the KISS principle is applied. Right. Yes? Okay? Yes?
Maharaj, one question. We study the different rules, what we must follow, and what we should observe. But I also think in the night, if out of ignorance or just by being once you've been lazy, if we would still do things which does not fall under the purview of those rules and regulations, no matter whether they're lower in the grade or higher, or the higher Krishna reciprocates, then what are the repercussions?
Basically, people, the point is what you're aware of is what you deal with. But at the same time, it's not that occasionally the Lord or the devotees won't try to make you aware of something. And generally, from what I've seen, is Krishna will start with some subtle method of making you aware. You know, and if that doesn't work, it would get grosser and grosser until, you know, you start working with Mack trucks and stuff like that, you know. You know, it's like you're riding your motorcycle and you hit the Mack truck, you know, then it's kind of like obvious that maybe I should reconsider my method of transport. You know, but in the beginning, it's, you know, someone mentions that, you know, you get your new motorcycle and say, and then they say, oh, so you're only a, you know, you're an Australian. So they say, oh, you're only a temporary resident here in Australia? No, I have an Australian passport. No, but, you know, motorcycle people are known for being temporary residents of Australia, you know, like that. And, you know, you might catch it then, you might not, you know. Like, you know, it looks great in the window, and, you know, like that, looks tough, looks neat. But, you know, have you ever thought of it, you know, what would you think of taking, you know, one of those truck engines out of those big, huge monster trucks, sticking that in your little two-seater Mazda, and then flooring it, you know, it's like, you know what I'm saying? So it's like, you got something that can take you 10 times faster than you really would like to be going, you know, with only 2 wheels on the ground that anything can make them slip. A piece of a grain of sand. A little oil, like every time it rains, all the oil from the cars is there very slippery, you know, like that. And somehow or another, because it makes lots of noise when it goes vroom vroom, then, you know, you somehow or another have this concept that I am, what do you call it, you know, impervious to destruction, like that, you know. So, I mean, there's a lot of things that work here. Does that make sense? So. Therefore, if the Lord may make you aware, someone may make a comment about behavior or something, this and that, you catch it nice, you contemplate it, you work it out, great. If you don't work it out, then at some point it'll become very obvious. You know what I'm saying? So it's not that, you know, the point is it's practical. You work with what you're aware of. And as long as that's fully absorbing, these other things won't be necessarily worried about. You know, it's like little kids. You know, they come here and they do something nice for you, take part in kirtan. No one worries about other things about them, you know. So, that's nice. But, as one becomes habituated to that aspect and becomes expert at that, now you can upgrade other things that have not been noted. You know what I'm saying? Your handwriting is terrible in first grade. You know, your letters are backwards. No one's really, you know, going to make a big stink. You know, no one's going to sue the school or, you know, say you're an idiot. But, you know, if it's sixth grade and it's still like that, then we have a problem. You know what I'm saying? So, in other words, what you're aware of, what it is you're dealing with in your Krishna consciousness that's fully absorbing, then that's kept nice. If you're not fully absorbed, you're lazy, that's when more things start happening. But if you're active, you're trying your best, then generally minimal side things will, you know what I'm saying. Is that okay?
Yeah. Again, out of curiosity, one question, why the hands of the beings are painted red?
You want them to be another color, green or purple or something?
Like, not, you know.
Okay, it means if you had a girl, she had a nice pink palm, or would you rather be like purple? Maybe now they're black. You know what I'm saying? Pink is the natural color of the hands. Like that, that's why you have slightly pink hands. God has something. And the back of the hand is not so pink. Front is more pink. Like that. That's everybody. It doesn't matter what color the skin is, the palms are pinkish. That's just the way it is.
So they should be pinkish, not reddish.
Depends on how you want to interpret it. You know, if it's more, you want to get, you know, if you're going, you know, how to say, rah. say characterize? Characterize. Not character, there's another word that's what means it's like, you know, how you say, artistically taken farther. There's another specific word for it, which means it's like the Chinese lions. They don't look like lions, but everyone knows the lions. So in other words, it's an artistic method. So being red like that, that's also not an uncommon thing. A lot of the traditional beauties, it's red. But if, you know, you have artists who want to keep it to, you know, kind of a more, you know, like that, that leaves a, you know, a pleasant pink and like that. But it doesn't matter. Like that. You know. Either one is okay. The offenses against the holy name are as follows. One, to blaspheme the devotees who have dedicated their lives for propagating the holy name of the Lord. So in other words, one should be appreciative of the devotees. One should always remember these things have an inverse. Because the point is the devotees who are preaching like that, that's who the Lord's mercy comes through. The Kripa Shakti comes through the preachers. Basically speaking, the neophyte is distracted by whatever they're doing, so compassion is not necessarily their main feature. The Uttamadhikari is everybody else is a great devotee, they consider themselves not a devotee. So what does that mean? But it leaves you the mundans. So the preachers. So then in the mundane position, the Uttamas come down to that, and the neophytes step up to that. So in other words, those who are preaching, in the act of preaching, that's where the Lord's mercy, potency, is coming. That's why people become devoted. That's why you're touched by it. Right? You know? Otherwise, where does it come from? It's not words. Right? There's a potency there. That's what has the effect. Right? Prabhupada made the point from Bhagavad Gita. There were 700 translations of Gita at the time when he made his. And he points that out. But he's saying, this one has potency, because this is as it is. This is coming in part for all. The other one's speculative. That's why people read it, no one's become a devotee. People read Prabhupada's Gita, they become devotees. Why? Because the chit potency is there. Does that make sense? So that's why those who are preaching were very, very careful, because they're carrying that potency, Lord's potency. So that you have to be very, very careful about that. You know, in other words, they may have their own personal difficulties. That's a separate issue. You know, maybe the issue needs to be addressed, but it is a separate issue. You can't combine the two. Like that. Does that make sense? So just like by occupation, someone is, let's say, a business person. So he can either be, you know, a nice person or not a nice person. You know, it just depends whether he wants to make money or not. So, but it's a separate issue. Right? You're in administration, you can administrate and all that, whether you're a really nice person or not, it's another question. Why your personal issue, that's another thing. As long as you can do what you're doing properly. That makes sense. So the same as in the Brahminical. They can perform the Brahminical activities, that's their inherent nature, but they may have difficulties. Right? It's not that, if they have one fault, they can't be a Brahmin. No, it's an occupation. It's a nature. Right? Does that make sense? So it's natural that the higher it is, it's supposed to be the less problems. The lower it is, then there can be more problems. You know what I'm saying? So you can be a good businessman and not have one good quality. You know, like that. It's like someone posted once, it was called Good Guys Finish Last. And it said, and the subtitle was, Here Are the Winners. You know, there was a couple of guys very proud, you know, standing there. So these are the cutthroat, you know, businessmen. You know, so that's the, like that. So therefore, someone has that commitment, that preaching. At the same time, you have to be very careful if they themselves have their own, you know, personal issues. They're two different things. So you have to appreciate the preaching. The other thing is then what you work with, the adult club together. Be very careful. Okay. Two, consider the names of demigods like Lord Shiva, Lord Brahma, to be equal to or independent of the name of Lord Vishnu. Sometimes the atheistic class of men take it that any demigod is as good as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishnu. But one who is a devotee knows that no demigod, however great he may be, is independently as good as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, someone thinks he can chant Kali, 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 or Durga, Durga, and is the same as Hare Krishna. That is the greatest offense. In other words, all these other names are expanded from Krishna, because they're his potency. Durga means the prison keeper. Right? So he is the one that gives that potency. Otherwise, how do you keep everybody in here? Right? You have to, you know, the warden of the prison has to have certain potency, otherwise how do they do it? So, you know, but here we're talking about the material world. No one gets out of here. You know, so how competent, how potent is the, you know, the prison keeper? Does that make sense? So, they're getting their potency from Krishna, just like Ganesh, he's getting his potency from the Shingadeva. So, everybody's getting their potency from Krishna. So, therefore, to consider them equal, that would be wrong. Besides that, then, you have the primary names and secondary names. So, the primary names mean Krishna in his relationship with his devotees. Nanda Nandana, Yashoda Nandana, you know, Vajrabihari, all these different things, they're in connection with the devotees. So those are primary names, those have the most potency. Secondary names are ones that are qualities of God, you know, meaning, you know, showing his godness, you know, the supreme, you know, Ishwara, you know, like that, or Paramatma, or these different things that establish his position as God. And so the demigods' names are then names of the Lord, meaning his potencies that are given to the demigods for their office. You know what I'm saying? Just like you have the head of state gives the potency to the, and the office to the ministers. Does that make sense? So they're actually his names, but they're giving the demigods. So therefore now you're already taking the secondary names of his that you're attributing to the demigod and saying they're as good as or equal to the Lord. You know, a great mistake. They're his names that are secondary names that are less potent and they're given to others to use for his offices. Right? So, therefore, you know, they can't be considered separately powerful or of equal power. For instance, yes.
Before,
when he used to go from, he made Sri Lanka, mm-hmm.
And then he
met Shiva in Lanka. So, like, when you preach, because especially Hindus say,
like, Ram
and Ram
is the same as Shiva.
Ram is the same, so that means then, if I go and I worship you, then I'm the same as you or something? So that means every morning those Hindus get up, go in, and then touch their mother's feet, so they're the same as their mother? Is that how it works? You know what I'm saying? In other words, it's the same hackneyed point. The thing is this, Ravana was whose devotee?
Shiva's
devotee. Ram was going to Lanka to do what?
Kill
Ram. So therefore, out of respect for his devotee Shiva, that one of his devotees is going to kill, therefore he just, you know, how you say, did that worship. That doesn't mean to become him. Right? You know, and they should use the brains a little bit. They worship so many things, they don't become that. So, yes.
Well, I have a question about Kirtan. Is chanting the names of other than Krishna's names or God's names is still considered kirtan? Because we see becoming very popular chanting different names of demigods and still called
it's not recommended. I mean, I wouldn't do it like that, so, but I mean, it's up to the individuals to do it. I wouldn't recommend doing it temporarily like that. You know, if you want to do it, you know, privacy, your own house, you do whatever you like. Spend it in the head, do what you like, it's not our business. But the point is normally, why would one bother? You know what I'm saying? It's like, it said that one name of Vishnu, by chanting 1,000 names of Vishnu, you get the benefit of one name of Ram. You know what I'm saying? So it seems 1,000 times more powerful. And 3 names of Ram equals 1 name of Krishna. So then why would one be chanting anything other than Rama and Krishna? You know. And we're talking about Vishnu's names, which then have that potency. Why would, and they're 1,000 times less, why would we bother with demigods' names? You know what I'm saying? It's just, you know.
Traditionally, word Kirtan would refer only to a holy name?
Traditional Kirtan means it would be names of Vishnu. Like that. I mean, they may have their, you know, those who are not worshippers of Vishnu might have their kirtan. It's all, you know, Durga names or this names or that names, but we're not involved with such people and stuff like that, so we don't care about. But the point is why use those names? What potency are you getting out of them? What benefit? You're spending so much time, so much exertion, what are you going to get back from them? So if you're smart, you know, if I told you, okay, here's $1, you can put it into this program and, you know, you're going to get back $100,000, or you can put it into this program and you'll get back $1, which you're going to take. So that's the point. So devotees are smart, they go for the better plan. You know what I'm saying? So those who do other things for extra and this and that, then, you know, it may be fashionable in their circles. But, you know, fashion has the nature of changing, and fashion has the nature of not necessarily being beneficial. You know what I'm saying? In other words, the you know, how you say, the 20 sets of clothes in your closet that you can't wear anymore because they're out of fashion, you didn't get the benefit for it. The people that, the retailers who sold them, the wholesalers who sold them, the fashion house who made them, they're the ones who make the profit. You know what I'm saying? So, fashion that isn't necessarily so important. In other words, stick to fashions that are always in fashion. You know what I'm saying? That's like being clean is always in fashion. It's, you know, stick to stuff like that. I wouldn't recommend using demigods' names for kirtan.
I think it's often done to attract people.
But the point is Krishna, it means all attractive. Why would these others be attractive? The point is the holy name is attractive. And, you know, the environment's attractive, the mood is attractive, one will be attractive, you know. Otherwise, you want to be attractive, you know, why aren't we chanting, you know, Britney Spears, or, you know, whoever else is, you know, happening, Angelina Jolie, or, you know, like that, you know, Brad Pitt, you know, Catch the Girls, you know, so I mean, so, you know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? Yeah. Oh, okay.
Maharaj, it's quite a close and small community in Sydney. Like,
yeah, I'm leaving in a couple of days, so I'll leave this bomb for you guys to work out.
Okay,
should I stop now? No, you can go. The point is, you know, it's like that. You know, the dust is going to be settling on you guys. Like that, so go ahead.
Okay,
you can pull, you know. Just remember that after you pull the little pin out, then you have a certain amount of seconds before it blows up.
Okay. So like we're in situations where we have people from lots of different lineages coming together and chanting. And so like we've got a yoga expert coming up and some of the performers are chanting Shiva from Shiva. And we're all there.
So that's the general expo.
Yeah.
It's not, we're not arranging. When we go, we'll chant, you know, our names. They're chanting their names. So it's just, it's a regular program. Like we go to a Woodstock program. So we go and sing and do our kirtans or our music about Krishna. And the others are, you know, copying, you know, whatever, or, you know, grateful or not so grateful dance or, you know, whatever it is that they're following. Boys in different colors, you know, all these different things. So it's like, you know, different kinds of bars, they sing songs, you know, that's happening. What is called the group, you know, about affirmation, like that, you know, so like that. You know, shows like that, they have, like that. Different kinds of ease, you know, like wasps and stuff like that. You know what I'm saying? So what do we care? Point is, we don't arrange. You know what I'm saying? If we're having a kirtan, then we're not going to sing those things. But if it's a general yoga fair and everybody's performing and they do theirs, then what are we doing about it? You know, we have our, what we're doing, we do our thing. Does that make sense? I mean, in other words, they don't know any better, so at least they're respecting somebody. That's a step up these days, you know, like that. You know, so that's nice, but at the same time, is why stop there? Why not keep going? Is that okay? So that wasn't so much of a law. I was thinking of bringing up another law.
So Maharaj, is it okay for us to come to the group or not?
I would have a tendency not. I would have a tendency to go do something else because, you know, go chant, you know, on japa, go read and stuff like that. If it's somebody who hasn't really come in contact with Krishna consciousness, it's not a problem. Because for them, they don't necessarily make distinction. So therefore, you know, this group, that group, that's the New Age thing. You know, it's all, you know, it's all nice, it's all one, it's all like that.
They
do
that.
Yeah, no, they do. So therefore, for those persons, it's not a problem. Because in there, if we're there also, they'll take part in ours. So then they get the benefit. That's the idea of these kind of programs in the Vedic sense, is that you have something where people get together and deal with some variety of spirituality. So in that, you may be fortunate and a devotee might be there. So then you'll hear from them and get benefit, but at the same time there is the chance that they're not there. You know, so then you miss out. So it's not, but once one has that discrimination, it's generally, you know, one would take part in something else, you know, because there's plenty of, there's not, everybody's not there in the kirtan, it's other people, so you would talk to them or interact with them or practice your own sadhana, do your own reading and stuff like that. So, you know, the point is we're not, you know, up there with flat cards and all that, kind of making everyone feel uncomfortable, you know, or speaking badly. We're just speaking about Krishna, because that's the method there, you know, just like the academics. You don't talk about conclusions, so for them you don't talk about, you know, that, you know, the kind of things. You know, does that make sense? You just follow the etiquette of the, but it doesn't mean we don't do our own thing. Is that okay? Yeah, okay. Something else? Yes. He's a devotee, so who is he worshipping?
He's worshipping Krishna.
So therefore then we're worshipping Krishna. That's our worship of Shiva, is that we do like he does.
But we also worship like, you know, the devotees of Krishna as well.
There's so many devotees. Right? Are you doing all of them? Or have you looked at a festival, how many there are? When J. Jayadev Goswami's appearance day was there. Did he do something special? You know what I'm saying? So the point is what we're saying is if it's in your tradition, you have a family, they follow Shivaratri, then there's no problem, because who they're seeing Shiva is, who knows? But you know who he is, so you're worshipping him in that way. But then the point is according to the rules, still you still have to worship the Shalagram first, and then remnants go to, that's the way all demigod worship is proper, is that you can't worship the demigod directly, you have to worship Vishnu first, his remnants go to the demigod. Like that. That's just the way it works. Anyway, so I'm just saying if it happens to be part of your tradition, your family's following it, that if you're over here in Australia and you just have yobs out, you know, drinking beer at night and yelling and screaming, it may not be as important. Does that make sense? You know, but if you're in India and, you know, the families always follow that and they're making their, you know, how you say, you know, Ekadasi, you know, kind of food for that day and doing the fat, not a problem. Yeah.
This year we celebrated Shivaratri here, but we had Urmila Mataji with us and she did the presentation about Lord Shiva from Srimad Bhagavatam.
Yeah, it's not a problem.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, it's one of those things that if you wanna do something for it, you can. If you don't, it's just like we have so many festivals you can do.
That's very nice, because there was actually a very nice presentation of who Lord Shiva actually is.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's very...
Yeah, you could have a nice festival, because then everyone would come and then you can tell them actually who Lord Shiva is. So it's not a problem. What we're saying is it's not a must.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in other words, you know, we have our major festivals, those are there. If you can do more, then great. You know, like that. You see this from, yeah.
Please excuse the ignorance of my question, but my family is very strict Catholic. And whenever I go to visit them, they're still... Like, when you're in our house, you come to Mass on Sunday, or if it's Christmas...
It's not a problem. Just, you know, watch out for, you know, the how you say, the wine and the crackers. Leave that for the chorus, you know.
They kneel down a lot, like, during the service.
No, Jesus is one of our gurus, so
yeah.
We have no problem. Because the problem is they didn't quite understand what he meant. But, it's not a problem. Because the point is you could probably explain to them.